This is Nancy Clare, and welcome to episode 15 of Speaking of Mysteries. This week's guest is Mike Lawson, whose House Reckoning, the ninth novel in his Joe DeMarco series, has just been released. And even though it's the ninth in the series, feel free to jump right in, as House Reckoning deals with political fixer Joe DeMarco's backstory, including confronting aspects of his past that he hadn't dwelled on much, especially his father's role in a Queens, New York mob. I don't know how new the idea of a fixer as a character is, but it seems that having a fixer as a protagonist is picking up steam. Mike Lawson's Joe DeMarco has been around for about 10 years. There was the George Clooney film Michael Clayton with the signature line that could come from any fixer, "I'm not the guy you kill." And right now, Roy Donovan, a Hollywood fixer that, I understand, is closer to real than anyone would like to think, is in its second season on Showtime. And next week's guest, Roger Hobbs Jack, which may or may not, is probably not his real name, the protagonist of his first novel, Ghost Man, which has received numerous nominations for Best First Novel from many mystery and thriller genre organizations, including the Edgar and the Anthony. I think one of the appeals of a fixer is he is not a police officer and he is not a private detective, and he is someone who can be a little bit more ambiguous. But let's hear what Mike Lawson has to say about his Joe DeMarco.
Of which is House Reckoning, about fixer Joe DeMarco. So welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you, Nancy. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I mean, these are remarkable novels, and that actually brings me to my first the first thing I want to talk to you about. It's sort of a question, and but also a philosophical point. I see the rise of the fixer as a protagonist, and it might be that Joe DeMarco was on the vanguard of this. The first book came out in the middle of the last decade, followed not long after by the film Michael Clayton. Now we've got Ray Donovan and last year's remarkable novel Ghost Man by Roger Hobbs, which had Jack, which may or may not be his name. So what makes a fixer such an appealing protagonist?
Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't start off with the idea of writing about a fixer. What really happened was that when I made the decision to start writing, I decided a couple of things. One of those things is I wanted to write a series, which may or may not have been a good decision, because there are drawbacks to writing a series. But that was one of the first decisions I made, is I wanted to write a series. The second one I made was I wanted the books to be set not so much in Washington, D.C., because all my novels aren't set in D.C., but I wanted to have I almost call it a D.C. jump-off point. And the reason for that, and I've used this expression many times, is because Washington, D.C. for a writer is a target-rich environment. There's always something going on back there that's corrupt or silly or horrendous or sometimes heroic. And you're dealing with big things, big institutions like the CIA or the NSA, and you're dealing with lots of money and a lot of power. And so the second decision I made is I wanted something involving, D.C. and that everything that surrounds it. Then the final decision I made, this is how we kind of get to the fixer aspect of it, is what I didn't think the world of fiction needed was another detective. You know, John Sanford has already done the detective cop and a guy like the Elvis Cole writer. He's already got a lot of private eyes out there and that sort of thing. And so I was really looking for something unique. It wasn't a cop and it wasn't a lawyer and it wasn't a private eye. And that's when I came up with the idea of DeMarco. I just wanted this guy who had this vague, shady position working for a semi-corrupt politician there in the House. And I could use that as a springboard. I mean, this guy didn't have to be a cop. He's his boss gives him various assignments and he goes off and does stuff. And in terms of, who the guy is, yeah, that's who he is. He's a fixer. He's a troubleshooter. He's sometimes Mahoney's bagman. But that's how the character came about. It was really trying to come up with something that was different than a cop or a lawyer or the typical things you see in mystery, crime fiction.
Well, I think to me, when I read this story, and I mean, certainly Joe DiMarco is a likable guy, and I would think that fixers have to be both likable and feared. But he's very ambiguous. I mean, you don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy. He likes to play golf, and he doesn't mind. He doesn't seem to mind some of the more onerous things that he has to do. I mean, in House Reckoning, we're going back to some of the events that set him on the path to where he is now. And it's very clear that he can be violent if he needs to or thinks he needs to.
Well, and that's the thing about that character. I mean, if you look at the series, I mean, John Mahoney, his boss, is pretty definitely a bad guy, or he can be a bad guy. The Emma character in these books is definitely a good guy. I mean, she's a person who has a definite moral center, and she doesn't really deviate from it. And she can't be forced to deviate from him. DeMarco's a guy that walks the line. And he's willing to do some bad things as long as he thinks it's for a good cause. And there's other things he's not willing to do. So DeMarco was always kind of going back and forth over the line in order to do his job and also to keep his job. But there are things that Joe won't do. I mean, you know, this, I think House Reckoning was the first book I had where Joe actually was thinking about killing somebody. And so that character, I mean, he's, I suppose the most ambiguous character in the books is probably Emma. But Joe clearly is going back and forth across his wavy line of morality and the law. But in his own mind, he never has considered himself a bad guy. In most of the books, he doesn't really do bad things.
But, I mean, I guess the argument could be made that he's in the employ of someone with, as you said, slippery... slippery moral compass. He's got his own agenda, and it's not necessarily the nation's, even though he's an elected official with a really important job. It's a little bit like it's John Mahoney's country, and we just happen to live in it.
Well, and Mahoney, I mean, as most people know, the idea of a corrupt politician is hardly something that's too far-fetched.
Well, that's true, but it's interesting, this series of books, because he's not actually the central character, and he's also not the focus of, I mean, it's sort of not really Joe's raison d'etre to bring John Mahoney down. John Mahoney, you know, he's made a moral, morally, you know, with a little bit of moral relativism, he's made his peace, it seems, with...
Well, the other thing in fiction, and it's true with my books, and I'm sure it's true with other people's books, characters are not only characters, they're also devices. And what I mean by that is that the character Emma in these books in the past is a device in the sense that because of her past, she has access to places where DeMarco can't go. Places like the CIA and the Pentagon and the military. Mahoney is also a device in a sense. He's a device in the sense that he's the launching pad for DeMarco to go off and do the kind of cases he's involved in. The only character that isn't a device, I guess you'd say, is DeMarco himself, because he's the protagonist in the series doing whatever he decides to do, based on the story. The other thing I do, and I've had some lashback on this, is I don't really write the character so much, the story so much for the character. I get interested in the topic, and then it's a matter of deciding, well, how do I make this set of characters, fit within that topic? But usually, I usually start off with it's the idea that I'm really starting with more than anything else. Probably the best example of that was my sixth book, House Divided, which was about NSA eavesdropping during the Bush era. And to write that story, I pretty much had to write Mahoney and Emma out of the story in order to be able to tell it the way I wanted to tell it. And the funny thing about that book is here it is 2014, we're having the Obama NSA wire, eavesdropping scandal with the NSA. So
I can't believe more novels haven't come out in the past year that have an Edward Snowden character in that,
But well, I'm sure they will.
But you mentioned that. You mentioned that on your website, that House Justice was the springboard for that, was the Valerie Plame case, and Chinese spies stealing nuclear secrets is in the second perimeter. And, of course, the Chinese situation of stealing technical data is still going on.
Oh, yeah.
But House Reckoning is interesting because it's less about a Washington situation than Joe DiMarco's own personal life, and we get to see, it's a window into growing up the son of a mob hitman.
Yeah, that book really just came out of, after the ninth novel in the series, and after writing, eight previous books, and I referred many times to DeMarco's father, it just seemed like that was a good book to go explore that, to go say, well, how did DeMarco's father, ever get to do with what he was doing, and what effect did that have on Joe's life? And then when he finds out what actually happened to his father, then, of course, he goes down the path he goes down in the book. But it's just one of those things you can do when you're writing a series. I've had people email me, and I thought about, well, maybe one of these books should be about Emma's background one of these days.
It's one of the fun things
about a series. It's also one of the hard things about a series is making sure that you're, when you go down a path with characters, you have to kind of watch where you're going in terms of, you've given them a past, and then you can encumber them with things you don't necessarily want to encumber them with.
Well, Emma,
you have to think about.
Emma definitely has the most mysterious past of your characters, and you're right. I mean, that could just take you down a number of books into Emma's backstory. But I thought in House Reckoning, you created an incredibly sinister character in Quinn. I mean, that was that's I think people that read mysteries or read thrillers, that's kind of the worst nightmare, is someone in a position of power who seems unimpeachable is really evil.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, it happens, too, in real life. I mean, it's not necessarily to that degree, but it's one of the problems with people that have power, and they get to a point where they think they're above the law, and to a certain extent they are.
And so you must agree that absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Well, it certainly seems like that's a tendency too. But it makes
for a very good character. But I thought that was, especially that the person was a law enforcement, and I don't want to give away the book, but the person high in the law enforcement chain of command in New York City.
Well, a lot of that book, in fact, is the background of that character is actually based on the real life commissioner of the police department in New York City. Not that the current commissioner, is corrupt, but in terms of his educational background and jobs that he had, and it was my editor who actually lives in New York that pointed out to me the whole Ring of Steel thing there in New York with all the surveillance cameras and things like that were installed. And so in the research of the book, I mean, there is realism behind the characters and the setting.
It felt very real. I thought the personalities were well drawn and believable. The lines get crossed all the time. There's always sort of this gray area. What is the bigger evil?
Everything with the bad guys, I don't know about other authors, but I try very hard on this, is that the bad guys don't think of themselves as bad guys. They never do. I mean, the bad guys have reasons for what they do. They rationalize what they do. And so when I'm writing, and I tend to change perspectives a lot as I'm writing the story, and so when I'm writing the story from the perspective of the bad guy, for me, it's important to make this guy not come across as some sort of mindless Terminator who just goes around doing evil. I mean, he has a rationale for doing it. And like the case of Quinn in this book, there's good aspects to Quinn. I mean, there are good things he did for one of the detectives that works for him. And he donates to charities, and he cares about the crime rate in New York. And I try to do that with almost all the bad guys. I've never had a bad guy who's just sort of a mindless serial killer. I think it's important that you try to look at it from his perspective, even if it's a bad perspective. You have to look at it from his perspective.
So let's move away from Joe DeMarco for just a moment. You have written what may be a standalone called Rosarita Beach. That features Kay Hamilton of the DEA. And do you think that Kay Hamilton will return?
Well, she'll definitely return. The sequel to Rosarito Beach is called Viking Bay, and it's being released in January. And what I do in the sequel, I mean, in Rosarito Beach, Kay started out as a DEA agent there in San Diego. In Viking Bay, I actually moved her to D.C. at the end of, I guess it doesn't really give away a whole lot, but at the end of Rosarito Beach, Kay fired. And Viking Bay actually starts off with her back in D.C. I don't know, you know, that's going to be up to the publisher whether there'll be a third book or not, but I've got one about, you know, half written, so I'm hoping I'll be able to continue that series.
Well, and I always ask this of writers who have more than one series, do you ever plan to have your characters meet?
Well, that's been suggested by a lot of folks that end up emailing my website, that possibility that DeMarco and Kay should meet at some point, and I certainly haven't written it out. I just haven't.
Well, I mean, after all, Joe is single.
Yeah, and I've had readers complain about that, too. In fact, I got an email just yesterday. Some lady wrote me and said, well, isn't it about time for Joe to have a girlfriend, you know?
He's a busy guy.
But like I said, you know, I always start with the story right now. And, yeah, and so far, I haven't had the story that would, you know, cause that to happen just yet. But it's always a possibility. It'd be fun.
Sometimes, yeah, I would think it would be fun, especially if you've got these two universes and putting it in, you know, constructing them in such a way that the universes can collide. And I would think that would be something that would be really fun to do, especially if Kay is now a former DEA agent, and we don't exactly know what her next job's going to be, whether it's going to be for a government agency or it's going to be in the quasi-government agency like Joe's.
Well, I guess I'm hoping people will read Viking Bay and find that out. Now, the other thing about Rosarito Beach is its origin. In the case of DeMarco and the House books, like I said, I started off at the beginning, you know, knowing the kind of series I wanted to write. And the way Rosarito Beach came about was kind of a fluke. I hadn't sat down one day and said I should start another series. What happened was there's a television producer who likes the Emma characters in my DeMarco novels, and one day he emailed me or called me or something and said, you know, I'd like to work together on a thriller with a female protagonist, you know, and I said, yeah, I don't know, and I thought about it. And basically out of that came a screenplay that was essentially Rosarito Beach. And then I called the producer and I talked to him and said, well, here's this idea I've got. And he sat down in San Diego and he said, well, you don't understand. We film all our stuff up in Ontario. And I thought about changing the story. And then I said, oh, to hell with it. And I ended up writing the novel instead. Never even finished the screenplay. And so that's how that came about. It was just this fluke of working on something with a female protagonist or character. That's how it came about. But it wasn't a master plan. And then after I wrote the first book, you know, then the idea for the second book came pretty quickly.
Well, I think the world can always use interesting protagonists, and especially interesting female protagonists. And I think that's something that we've seen in the last 20 years or so, you know, the sort of rise of women characters that are not necessarily secretaries or, you know, gal Fridays or sort of along for the ride. And they can be just as driven and just as troubled.
Well, yeah, this character is, you know, she's flawed. And partly it's because, you know, and so is DeMarco for that matter. It's because I like flawed characters. And so she is flawed. She is driven. She's ambitious. She's brave. At the same time, she can be insensitive and overly ambitious and a little bit ruthless. And as Rosary of Each goes on, I smooth that out a little bit. But again, I didn't want a superwoman type character. I like them a little bit flawed.
Well, first of all, readers can see themselves in the characters, and it makes them more interesting. I mean, I think that's another thing, important thing in the arc of fiction. You know, nobody's all bad and nobody's all good. This is not. At the core, it's about people, and like you said, you start with an idea and you're telling the story, and fiction is an incomplete art until the reader reads it.
Well, the other thing I think in fiction is you don't want to wrap up every loose end either. But at the end of a lot of these books, not all the bad guys get caught. Some of them, go on their way and are never snared by anybody. I like that aspect of it too, because I don't necessarily, usually the biggest bad guy in the book, usually something happens to him, but not every character. I mean, you don't want to sit there and try to wrap up every bow in a story.
Well, and that's certainly the case with Congressman Mahoney. I mean, I think you could categorize him as kind of a bad guy.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of the Russian in House Reckoning, without giving away the plot too much, but that guy pretty much gets away with what he does.
Well, that means he sort of lives to do evil another day.
Yeah, if you want him, we can bring him back for another one, and it's like the Tony Benedetto character in House Reckoning, which is one of my favorite characters to write. You know, he's been in a couple different books. Unfortunately, in this book he doesn't survive it, but that was another character. He was fun to write, and he'd been in previous books, and he was never arrested and that sort of thing, and he lived to live in House Reckoning.
In your work, when you worked for the U.S. Navy, did any of the work you did inform what you write about? Did you know fixers?
The only book that had anything to do with my task job for the Navy was in The Second Perimeter. That was my second book. And that's the book where it was actually based on the story of real Chinese spies down in Los Alamos, but I set that book in a shipyard where I used to work. That's the only book that's ever touched on anything to do with the Navy and nuclear submarines and things like that. And in that book, I was obviously very careful. There's nothing in that book that's classified or anything like that.
Where is Joe DeMarco going? What's up on the agenda for him in the next House and Office?
Well, the next book is done. In fact, I just went through the at least I hope it's done. I just went through the first editing cycle with my editor, a very good guy named Jameson Stoltz, who works for Grove. And it's a book that actually we don't have a title for it yet, but it's actually set back in North Dakota, in Bismarck. It has to do with natural gas and the local politics going on back there with getting laws changed and things like that. And so that one, I said, is pretty much in the can. The book after that, set in Boston, has to do with a little old lady that's booted out of her apartment complex, basically. That's where it starts with.
And, of course, now you're back in Congressman Mahoney's stomping ground.
Exactly. That's how Joe gets involved. He goes back, and like Congressman do, talking to a few constituents, and he finds out about this little old lady's plight and decides to help her out, partly for not so much to help her as to help himself, because he'll look good by doing something, but that becomes
PR.
The start.
Good PR to help the little old ladies from your old neighborhood.
Yeah.
Just seeing this idea of a fixer as a central character. I mean, Ray Donovan, it's front and center now. And it's both been, as I said, in film and in novels. And I understand.
Well, we've actually talked with the TV guys several times about DeMarco. It's just never happened yet. I mean, TV is complicated, But that has been an idea in the past, and we've been a little ways down that path, but never quite got there yet. Rosario Beach was also optioned for television. I don't know if anything's going to happen with that or not. You know, many books are optioned, but
many are optioned, but few are seen, unfortunately, because... Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate your time and talking to us and speaking to Speaking of Mysteries. And we look forward not just to more Joe DeMarco, but more Kay Hamilton, and hopefully a meeting of Joe DeMarco and Kay Hamilton. I'm a romantic. What can I say?
Well, thank you so much, Nancy. I appreciate it. And like I said, we'll get you an arc of the next book. And thanks for reading the house books. I really appreciate that, too.
My pleasure.
In part two of Speaking of Mysteries' two-part series on fixers as central characters, next week's interview is with Roger Hobbs, whose first novel, Ghostman, has been nominated for numerous Best First Novel Awards. Please check out the writers we have scheduled and let us know if you have any questions. Feel free to leave comments on the website, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Thanks again.